So what were we talking about when the class ended? Raise your hand if you remember. Raise your hand if you need remembering. A little prod. You have a good memory. Yes, but right before that we were talking about the demonic nature. And then how is Krishna going to solve this? The demons are fighting amongst themselves. They're in possession of the pot, which they had snatched from Dhanvantari, of nectar, which was what they were all working so hard for. Then, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who can counteract any unfavorable situation, then assume the form of an extremely beautiful woman. This incarnation as a woman, Mohini Murti, was most pleasing to the mind. Her complexion resembled in color a newly grown blackish lotus, and every part of her body was beautifully situated. Her ears were equally decorated with earrings, her cheeks were very beautiful, her nose was raised, her face full of youthful luster. Her large breasts made her waist seem thin. Attracted by the aroma of her face and body, bumblebees hummed around her, and thus her eyes were restless. Her hair, which was extremely beautiful, was garlanded with mallika flowers. Her attractively constructed neck was decorated with a necklace and other ornaments. Her arms were decorated with bangles, her body was covered with a clean sari, and her breasts seemed like islands in an ocean of beauty. Her legs were decorated with ankle bells. Because of the movement of her eyebrows, as she smiled with shyness and glanced over the demons, because of the movement, Krishna, when he becomes angry as Lord Nrisimhadev, he's the most angry. When he becomes beautiful and attractive as Mohini Murti, he's the most beautiful. And she had her ankle bells. And because the movements of her eyebrows, she was moving her eyebrows as she smiled with shyness, more attractive, and glanced over the demons. All the demons were saturated with lusty desires, and every one of them desired to possess her. They desired the aham purvam, aham purvam, not tuam, not tuam, not you, but me. Because when that mentality is there, there's no end to it. Because it's Ishwaraham, aham bhogi, siddhaham, balavan sukhi. Everything is meant for my pleasure, my enjoyment. So now the next chapter. And Krishna willing, we'll read up to 26, I believe. Is that correct? 26? Does anyone have the... Yes, is that the final... No, it's not the whole... Yes, no. Twenty-nine, yes, okay. Thereafter, Sukadev Goswami said, thereafter, the demons became inimical toward one immediately. As soon as the false ego begins acting and I want to be the enjoyer, then immediately everyone else becomes competitor, an enemy. So this is, if we are searching for Amrita, all we need is to have an enjoying spirit, which comes along automatically, necessarily with false ego. And then, as soon as the ultimate object of enjoyment, the member of the opposite sex, is there, then immediately enmity begins, which Prabhupada said was insincerity. So they became inimical towards one another, throwing and snatching the container of nectar. They gave up their friendly relationship, all cooperative spirit gone. Because it's possible to cooperate for a demonic plan. It's easy to cooperate for sense enjoyment in one sense. But soon as there is something in the way, there is competition for that, then the plan is immediately broken. And therefore, in that sense, it's impossible to cooperate, because amongst thieves, like Prabhupada told the story, after the thieves, as a group of thieves had stolen something, they went away to some place and sat down in a quiet place and said, let's divide it up honestly. So that's impossible, because there's thievery involved. So similarly, because false ego is involved, some sort of cooperation is required, but as soon as there is a reason for the cooperation to be ended, and soon as there's an object of sense enjoyment that can't be enjoyed equally or something like that, or it comes down to the actual dividing up of the goods, there must be enmity. So they began to snatch and throw the nectar. They gave up their friendly relationship, and meanwhile, they saw a very beautiful young woman coming forward towards them. Upon seeing the beautiful woman, the demon said, alas, so immediately bewildered. Because this is the ultimate bewilderment. Alas, how wonderful is her beauty, how wonderful the luster of her body, how wonderful the beauty of her youthful age. Speaking in this way, they quickly approached her, full of lusty desires to enjoy her, and began to inquire from her in many ways. So how sweetly they're speaking, but what's in their mind? It's just simply in their own personal selfish enjoyment. So the sweet speech is disguising the simple selfishness, the hardness and the selfishness. Oh, wonderful, beautiful girl. You have such nice eyes, resembling the petals of a lotus flower. Who are you? Where do you come from? What is your purpose in coming here? And to whom do you belong? Oh, you whose thighs are extraordinarily beautiful, our minds are becoming agitated simply because of seeing you. So Prabhupada's purport. The demons inquired from the wonderfully beautiful girl, to whom do you belong? A woman is supposed to belong to her father before her marriage, to her husband after her marriage, and to her grown sons in her old age. In regard to this inquiry, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that the question, to whom do you belong, means, whose daughter are you? Since the demons could understand the beautiful girl was still unmarried, every one of them desired to marry her. Thus they inquired, whose daughter are you? So what were they doing first? What did Krishna said? Krishna said, when the demigods took shelter of Ajita, don't worry, I'll create quarrel amongst them. So the demons were fighting over what? The nectar. And what is nectar? Amrita. They were fighting over immortality. But as soon as they saw this beautiful Krishna woman, they forgot all thoughts of the immortality, practically speaking. They forgot everything. This is the power of the illusory energy, of Krishna's illusory energy, when he wants to bewilder someone and he's empowered. This form to bewilder. So what to speak of human beings? Even the demigods, demons, siddhas, gandharvas, charanas, and the various directors of the universe, the Prajapatis, have never touched you before. It is not that we are unable to understand your identity. Oh, beautiful girl with beautiful eyebrows, certainly providence, because she was moving her eyebrows and glancing at them. Certainly providence, fate, by his causeless mercy. Never mind immortality. What is causeless mercy now? It's redefined as, he has sent you to please the senses and minds of us all. Is this not a fact? We are now all engaged in enmity amongst ourselves because of this one subject matter, the container of nectar. Although we have been born in the same family, we are becoming increasingly inimical. Oh, thin-waisted woman, who are so beautiful in your prestigious position, we therefore request you to favor us by settling our dispute. All of us, both demons and demigods, have been born of the same father, Kasyapa, and thus we are related as brothers. But now we are exhibiting our personal prowess and dissension. Therefore, we request you to settle our dispute and divide the nectar equally amongst us. Prabhupada, in that little purport in 6, he says, the demons understood that the beautiful woman had attracted the attention of all of them. Therefore, they unanimously requested her to become the arbiter to settle their dispute. Having thus been requested by the demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of a beautiful woman, began to smile. Looking at them with attractive feminine gestures, she spoke as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, in the form of Mohini, he told the demons, O son of Kasyapa Muni, I am only a prostitute. How is it that you have so much faith in me? A learned person never puts his faith in a woman. Purport. Chanakya Pandit, the great politician and moral instructor, said, Vishvaso naiva kartavya shrishu raja kuleshu cha. Never put your faith in a woman or a politician. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is pretending to be a woman, warned the demons against putting so much faith in her, for she had appeared as an attractive woman ultimately to cheat them. But it didn't make any difference. He spoke it, but they were so attracted that her words just seemed cute and pleasing. Indirectly disclosing the purpose for which she had appeared before them, she said to the sons of Kasyapa, How is this? You are all born of a great rishi, yet you are putting your faith in a woman who's loitering here and there like a prostitute unprotected by father or husband. Women in general should not be trusted, what to speak of a woman loitering like a prostitute. The word kamani is significant in this connection. Women, especially beautiful young women, invoke the dormant lusty desires of a man. Therefore, according to Manusamhita, every woman should be protected either by her husband, by her father, or by her grown sons. Without such protection, a woman will be exploited. Indeed, so this is the agreement between the men and women in the material world. I will exploit you, you will exploit me, but each trying to exploit the most. So as soon as a woman is exploited by a man, she becomes a common prostitute. This is explained by Mohini Murti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. O demons, she said, as monkeys, jackals, and dogs are unsteady in their sexual relationships and want newer and newer friends every day, women who live independently seek new friends daily. Friendship with such a woman is never permanent. This is the opinion of learned scholars. Sukadeva Goswami continued, After the demons heard the words of Mohini Murti, who had spoken as if jokingly, they were all very confident. They laughed with gravity, and ultimately they delivered the container of nectar into her hands. Thereafter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, having taken possession of the container of nectar, smiled slightly and spoke in attractive words. She said, My dear demons, if you accept whatever I may do, whether honest or dishonest, then I can take responsibility for dividing the nectar amongst you. We'll read these two purports. The Personality of Godhead in his form of Mohini was certainly not joking, but talking seriously with gravity. The demons, however, being captivated by Mohini Murti's bodily features, took her words as a joke and confidently delivered the container of nectar into her hands. Thus Mohini Murti resembles Lord Buddha, who appeared Sammohaya Suradvisham defeat the asuras. The word sura-dvisham refers to those who are envious of the demigods or devotees. Thus we see here that although Mohini Murti was speaking factually to the asuras took a word to be facetious. Indeed, they were so confident of Mohini Murti's honesty that they immediately delivered the container of nectar into her hands as if they would allow her to do with the nectar whatever she liked, whether she distributed it, threw it away, or drank it herself without giving it to them. So they were completely captivated, completely under her control, completely. They were killing each other to get the nectar, but as soon as they saw her, they were ready to give it away. And indeed they did. This, of course, this is the power of the Lord's potency, and this is the natural power of the illusory energy. And it should not be underestimated. The second purport to 12. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot abide by anyone's dictation. Whatever he does is absolute. The demons, of course, were deluded by the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus Mohini Murti got them to promise that whatever she would do, they would accept. The chiefs of the demons were not very expert in deciding things. Upon hearing the sweet words of Mohini Murti, they immediately assented. Yes, they answered, whatever you said is all right. Thus the demons agreed to accept her decision. The demigods and demons then observed a fast. After bathing, they were going to now distribute the nectar of immortality according to her discrimination. After bathing, they offered clarified butter and oblations into the fire and gave charity to the cows and to the Brahmins and members of the other orders of society, namely the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, who were all rewarded as they deserved. Thereafter, the demigods and demons performed ritualistic ceremonies under the directions of the Brahmins. Then they dressed themselves with new garments according to their own choice, decorated their bodies with ornaments, and sat facing east on seats made of kusa grass. O king, as the demigods and demons sat facing east in an arena decorated with flower garlands and lamps and fragrant with the smoke of incense, that woman, dressed in a most beautiful sari, her ankle bells tingling, entered the arena, walking very slowly because of her big low hips. Her eyes were restless due to youthful pride. Her breasts were like water jugs, her thighs resembled the trunks of elephants, and she carried a water pot in her hand. Her attractive nose and cheeks and her ears, adorned with golden earrings, made her face very beautiful. As she moved, her sari's borders on her breasts moved slightly aside. When the demigods and demons saw these beautiful features of Mohini Murti, who was glancing at them, and slightly she glanced at all of them, completely bewildered everyone, they were all completely enchanted. They were mystified. They were under her spell. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks here that Mohini Murti is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a feminine form, and that the goddess of fortune is her associate. This form assumed by the personality of Godhead challenged the goddess of fortune. The goddess of fortune is beautiful, but if the Lord accepts the form of a woman, he surpasses the goddess of fortune in beauty. It is not that the goddess of fortune, being female, is the most beautiful. The Lord is so beautiful that he can excel any beautiful goddess of fortune by assuming a female form. 19. Demons are by nature crooked, like snakes. Mana ratain asato davato bahi. They're crooked because they have demonic intelligence, born of false ego. Therefore, to distribute a share of the nectar to them was not at all feasible. not possible, since this would be as dangerous as supplying milk to a snake. To make them more strong, the Lord would not do that. Considering this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who never falls down, did not deliver a share of nectar to the demons. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Mohini Murti, the master of the universe, arranged separate lines of sitting places and seated the demigods and demons according to their position. Taking the container of nectar in her hands, she first approached the demons, satisfied them with sweet words, just spoke very sweetly to them as she glanced at them, and thus cheated them of their share of the nectar. Then she administered the nectar to the demigods who were sitting at a distant place to make them free from invalidity, old age, and death. Purport. Mohini Murti, the personality of Godhead, gave the demigods seats at a distance. Then she approached the demons and spoke with them very graciously so that they thought themselves very fortunate to talk with her. This is the illusory energy. And they were thinking, oh, she likes me specially. Since Mohini Murti had seated the demigods at a distant place, the demons thought that the demigods would only get a little of the nectar, and that Mohini Murti was so pleased with the demons that she would give the demons all the nectar. The words vanchayan apasancharai indicate that the Lord's whole policy was to cheat the demons simply by speaking sweet words. The Lord's intention was to distribute the nectar only to the demigods. O King, since the demons had promised to accept whatever the woman did, whether just or unjust, now, to keep this promise, to show their equilibrium, and to save themselves from fighting with a woman, they remained silent. They wanted to show off their exalted positions, how detached they were, how they trusted her, etc. So they didn't say anything. She had completely bewildered them. The demons had developed affection for Mohini Murti and a kind of faith in her, and they were afraid of disturbing their relationship. Therefore, they showed respect and honor to her words and did not say anything that might disturb their friendship with her. The demons were so captivated by the tricks and friendly words of Mohini Murti that although the demigods were served first, the demons were pacified merely by sweet words. The Lord said to the demons, "The demigods are very miserly and are excessively anxious to take the nectar first. So let them have it first. Since you are not like them, you can wait a little longer. You are all heroes and are so pleased with me. It is better for you to wait until the demigods drink." Very, very sweetly. Rahu, the demon who causes eclipses of the sun and the moon, covered himself with the dress of a demigod and thus entered the assembly of the demigods and drank nectar without being detected by anyone, even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Most astonishing. That even the Lord did not even recognize that he was there. He had disguised himself as a demigod, although he was a demon. The moon and the sun, however, because of permanent animosity towards Rahu, understood the situation. Thus Rahu was detected. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, using his disc, which was sharp like a razor, at once cut off Rahu's head. When Rahu's head was severed from his body, the body, being untouched by the nectar, could not survive. We'll read these two purports. They're short, 24, 25. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mohini Murti, was able to bewilder all the demons. But Rahu was so clever that he was not bewildered. Rahu could understand that Mohini Murti was cheating the demons, and therefore he changed his dress, disguised himself as a demigod, and sat down in the assembly of the demigods. Here, one may ask why the Supreme Personality of Godhead could not detect Rahu. The reason is that the Lord wanted to show the effects of drinking nectar. This will be revealed in the following verses. The moon and sun, however, were always alert in regard to Rahu. Thus, when Rahu entered the assembly of the demigods, the moon and sun immediately detected him, and then the Supreme Personality of Godhead also became aware of him. 25. The purport. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mohinimurti, severed Rahu's head from his body, the head remained alive, although the body died. Rahu had... This is sort of a little, in one sense, a prelude to to 27. Just imagine the demons were completely enthralled by Mohinimurti, how she looked, how she walked, how she spoke, the way her ankle bells were tingling, just how beautiful she was by her sweet words, and she walks over with the pot of nectar, and they're completely enchanted. What a wonderful word for it. Completely under her spell. His spell, her spell. And he's distributing the nectar to their enemies, the demigods, and it was just in their hands. And she's maybe every once in a while looking at them, just keeping her glance on them to keep them enchanted. And then Rahu drinks some, and the sun and the moon point it out, and suddenly she assumes, she takes out a disc and chops his head off. and the demons. And then first, but that's in 27. Rahu's head, however, being touched by the nectar, became immortal. Thus, Brahma accepted Rahu's head as one of the planets. Since Rahu is an eternal enemy of the moon and sun, he always tries to attack them on the nights of the full moon and the dark moon. That's the eclipse. But then in 27, so soon as he chops off Rahu's head, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the best friend and well-wisher of the three worlds. Thus, when the demigods had almost finished drinking the nectar, the Lord, in the presence of the demons, disclosed his original form. And what do you think they were thinking? We've been cheated. Yes. They saw what they thought was reality was something completely different. They had been cheated. They had been cheated of everything. They had been cheated of their immortality. And how do you think they felt? They would not humble because they're demons. They felt we've been cheated. I've been cheated. The place, the time. So this is what happens when one becomes cheated by the illusory energy and gives up the quest for immortality, the spiritual quest, just to try to enjoy the material world, especially of sex life, a member of the opposite sex. At some point, if one has done that, one will understand, I've been cheated. And then one will feel terrible. Cheated by whom? Ultimately, by Krishna. We can say by Maya, but by Krishna. Not cheated by ourselves, but it's Krishna pointing out that as long as we have false ego, as long as we maintain the spirit of enjoyment We will never get there. There will be so many allurements of so many different varieties. So many things are produced. When we try to churn our existence and get the nectar out of it, because that's what the material world actually is. It's a place where, and it's a churning process on a very real level. That's what happens. The heart must churn. Life must churn. It's not simple. It's not peaceful. And so many things will be produced from that churning process before nectar is produced. And then there's always that chance that some very, very beautiful, attractive member of the opposite sex will speak to us with very sweet words, and with their eyebrows moving and their eyes moving this way and that, and say, "Don't worry about a thing. I may cheat you, but don't worry about anything." And then, by the power of the illusory energy, give our heart for some time and become cheated. And everyone should be extremely careful about this. And in the society of devotees, because there is such, because the form of a woman and is empowered by the form, for the form of a man to bewilder, and vice versa. But it is always said in Shastra that the man is like butter and the woman is like fire. So out of the kindness and spirit of, and generosity of spirit of the women and so of the men, everyone should respect, be very careful in the dealings to respect the sanctity of the spiritual quest that's going on in the society of devotees. And be very careful not to be in an exploitative mood, because that exploitative mood is always, not always, meaning if one is pure, but until one is completely pure, it is just below the surface. Because devotional service dissolves the subtle body, but that false ego, that sense of I-ness separate from Krishna, and which houses the desires of enjoyment, that is very difficult to dissolve. It takes 100% sincerity. 100% sincerity. So we should, and this is one of the most sensitive topics in contemporary spiritual life within ISKCON, etc. You know, how about the dealings between the men and the women, the Matajis and the Pitajis, you know. But it should be done very, very considerately and carefully for the needs of each other. And one should know that, we should know that it's very dangerous. This is Maya's greatest, most powerful weapon. It's got nothing to do, in one sense, with the men. It's got nothing to do with the women. It's got to do with false ego and the empowerment of the material energy. And the mind becomes tricked so easily, and into the enjoying spirit so easily. We become enchanted by the witch of Maya. And she's empowered by Krishna to do it, and therefore she's unlimited. This is her kingdom. We're in her kingdom and trying to leave her kingdom, which is so difficult. This is her kingdom. She can't. Maya Paiti Abhimukhe Vilajamanam. She can't stand in front of Krishna. But this is her kingdom. and we're trying to do something so difficult to turn the ocean of material life and produce love for Krishna, while we have tendencies in the exact opposite direction, it is so difficult. So there should be so much respect for those who are on this path, and so much the mood of Prabhu and helping the other. Otherwise, no one survives, practically speaking. So that this is so difficult, in fact. The place, the time, the cause, the purpose, the activity, and the ambition were all the same for both the demigods and the demons. But the demigods achieved one result and the demons another. So these last two verses are the Sukadeva's purports, and Prabhupada's purports we'll read as well. Because the demigods are always under the shelter of the dust of the Lord's lotus feet, they could very easily drink the nectar and get its result. The demons, however, not having sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, were unable to achieve the results they desired. So this is what is going to make the difference for us. Because Daivyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratya, this Maya is just too powerful for anyone, no matter how strong, intelligent, anything, whatever good qualities we have, they are completely insufficient to surmount the difficulties that Maya places before us. But the only way is to become actual devotees. And here the difference between a demon and a devotee is given. That one, the devotees, they seek shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. They surrender. They become protected by Krishna. They want Krishna's protection. They know that no matter how, whatever they have, that is insufficient. They are not strong enough. So therefore, they did that and they easily drank the nectar. And again, nectar means eternal life, immortality. It means for us, it means Goloka Vrindavan. The demons, however, not having sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, were unable to achieve the results they desired. And this is our attempt. How are we going to surrender? How can I surrender? How can I deepen my surrender? And then padam padam yat vipadam natesham, that this place that is so dangerous at every step shrinks to vatsapadam. The ocean of the material world, samasritam ye parapalava plavam, mahatpadam punyaya shomarari, bhavam buddhir vatsapadam parampadam. It shrinks, the ocean of this material world, which is insurmountable. It shrinks to the size of the water that fills a calf's hoofprint, and one can effortlessly, unconsciously, practically speaking, walk over it if one has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the boat of the lotus feet of Krishna. But Krishna will test. Krishna will test, and he will test again. He will test again and again and again, until we become so sick of failing the test and so pained of losing Krishna's shelter that we just never let go, instead of only going to Krishna thinking, okay, next time I'm in a difficult situation, I'll take shelter of Krishna. But as soon as we think that, we're immediately in a difficult situation because we're not taking shelter of Krishna, and that's the only fearless situation, is that. So at some point, if Krishna is very kind to us, we just decide, I have no other choice. I'm so fallen, I'm so weak, that I can only hold on tightly and never, ever, ever let go, no matter what happens. And not turn away, no matter what happens. And that's what Maya makes us do. Just And especially we see this when chanting japa or chanting Gayatri. Immediately, we're supposed to be chanting, and then immediately the mind says, but this one thing. Yes, yes, you can chant, but this one thing. Just think about this right now. And then as soon as we leave it a little bit, then there's three things that we have to think about, and then five things, and 10 things, and suddenly we're gone. So we have to feel, and we have to feel, we have to know, have the faith that Krishna's shelter is real, and we have to know that there is no other shelter. And it will take us out. It takes time, perhaps, but once Krishna, he's teaching us, he's training us in his own inimitable personalized style, that there's no other. There is no other path other than the path of Saranagati leading to Prema Bhakti. But there will be churning. And then, and did anyone find a reference where the demons and devotees are both inside churning away in Kali Yuga? Inside of the person. Remember? Because that it's been said, I've heard it before. Who said it last week? Yeah, last class. Maybe you could look and see if you can find the reference. If you ask him gently. In Bhagavad Gita, this is Prabhupada's purport, 4.11, it is said, Yeye tamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Judge who rewards or punishes different persons according to their surrender unto his lotus feet. Therefore, it can actually be seen that although karmis and bhaktas may work in the same place, at the same time, with the same energy, and with the same ambition, they achieve different results. The karmis transmigrate through different bodies in the cycle of birth and death, sometimes going upward and sometimes downward, thus suffering the results of their actions in the karma chakra, the cycle of birth and death. The devotees, however, because of fully surrendering at the lotus feet of the Lord, are never baffled in their attempts. Although externally they work almost like the karmis, the devotees go back home, back to Godhead, and achieve success in every effort. The demons or atheists have faith in their own endeavors, but although they work very hard day and night, they cannot get any more than their destiny. The devotees, however, can surpass the reactions of karma and achieve wonderful results, even without effort. It is also said, Phalena Parichyate, one's success or defeat in any activity is understood by its result. There are many karmis in the dress of devotees, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can detect their purpose. The karmis want to use the property of the Lord for their selfish sense gratification. So Prabhupada there clarifies what he means by karmis in the dress of devotees. But a devotee endeavors to use the Lord's property for God's service. Therefore, a devotee is always distinct from the karmis, though the karmis may dress like devotees. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 3.9, yagya tat karmano nyatra lokayam karma bandhana. One who works for Lord Vishnu is free from this material world, and after giving up his body, he goes back home, back to Godhead. A karmi, however, although externally working like a devotee, is entangled in his non-devotional activity, and thus he suffers the tribulations of material existence. Thus, from the results achieved by the karmis and devotees, one can understand the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who acts differently for the karmis and jnanis than for the devotees. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita therefore says, Krishna bhakti nishkamata eva shanta bhakti mukti siri kami sakali ashanta. The karmis who desire sense gratification, the jnanis who aspire for the liberation of merging into the existence of the Supreme, And the yogis who seek material success and mystic powers are all restless, and ultimately they are baffled. But the devotee who does not expect any personal benefit and whose only ambition is to spread the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is blessed with all the auspicious results of bhakti yoga without hard labor. And the final verse. In human society, there are various activities performed for the protection of one's wealth and life by one's words, one's mind, and one's actions. But they're all performed for one's personal or extended sense gratification with reference to the body. All these activities are baffled because of being separated from devotional service. But when the same activities are performed for the satisfaction of the Lord, the beneficial results are distributed to everyone, just as water poured on the root of a tree is distributed throughout the entire tree. Purport. This is the distinction between materialistic activities and activities performed in Krishna consciousness. The entire world is active, and this includes the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, and the bhaktas. However, all activities except those of the bhaktas, the devotees, end in bafflement and a waste of time and energy. Mogasya moga kamano moga jnana vichetasaha. If one is not a devotee, his hopes, his activities, and his knowledge are all baffled. A non-devotee works for his personal sense gratification or for the sense gratification of his family, society, community, or nation. But because all such activities are separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are considered asat. The word asat means bad or temporary, and sat means permanent and good. Activities performed for the satisfaction of Krishna are permanent and good, but asat activities, although sometimes celebrated as philanthropy, altruism, nationalism, thisism, or thatism, will never produce any permanent results and is therefore all bad. So that's why Prabhupada said this will be frustration and bafflement, because everything will be temporary unless the activity is connected to the Lord's service. Even a little work done in Krishna consciousness is a permanent asset and is all good because it is done for Krishna, the all-good Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is everyone's friend, Saridam Savabhutanam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only enjoyer and proprietor of everything, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokamahisharam. Therefore, any activity performed for the Supreme Lord is permanent. As a result of such activities, the performer is immediately recognized. Nachatasman manusheshu kastinme priyakritama. Such a devotee, because of full knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what is that? Nachatasman manusheshu kastinme priyakritama. There's no translation. What is the meaning of that? Yes, that's the basic idea. No one is more dear to... So Prabhupada, it's not translated in the purport, but here, we'll read it again, but keep that in mind. Therefore, any activity performed for the Supreme Lord is permanent. As a result of such activity, the performer is immediately recognized. There is no one more dear to me than the preacher. Such a devotee, because of full knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is immediately transcendental, although he may superficially appear to be engaged in materialistic activities. The only distinction between materialistic activity and spiritual activity is that material activity is performed only to satisfy one's own senses, whereas spiritual activity is meant to satisfy the transcendental senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That doesn't mean that one type of spiritual activity, that every type of activity that a devotee does is equal. Because there are gradations of spiritual activity. If one's perfectly pure, then everything one does is on the same level. But if one is not on the pure devotional level, then there are certain activities that will have more potency, direct spiritual potency, than others, such as the hearing, the chanting, etc. So one can't give up the directly spiritual activities, such as
the hearing and chanting. For the other type of spiritual activities that are spiritual because of their contact with the spiritual activities, such as management, etc. Otherwise, as Prabhupada said, if one does that, it is only due to offense that one does that. And that when one, it's just a matter of time before one leaves,
falls down. By spiritual activity, everyone factually benefits, whereas by materialistic activity, no one benefits, and instead one becomes entangled in the laws of karma. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 9th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Lord's Incarnation as Mohini Murti. And it's not over yet. The fighting continues. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments on this? And not only that, they start fighting again and they lose. And that was what happened in the next chapter.
Yeah. What is the meaning of this nectar of immortality?
It's nectar of immortality in a non-eternal sense. Because they can't... It's like a very powerful, strong, seemingly eternal. But obviously they can't be eternal and live in a place where everything is ultimately annihilated. That's my conclusion about that. I told you. I just said what the sense was. But it's so long. It's so long that you think, what's the difference? You know, it's if you're going to live for 100 billion years, 10,000 billion years, and here we're used to the... It's inconceivable how long that is for us. Like if someone said to you, like for us probably, say, $100,000 is a lot of money, right? So if someone said, here's $1 billion, what, $65 billion, it seems like an unlimited amount, unending amount of money. So it's like that, but it isn't an unending amount of money. It has an end, a clear end.
Maybe it makes sense because they at least know they won't die before. They will be protected against death for so long.
Maybe.
Is it maybe?
Well, look, we'll ask the question at the end of the next chapter. Because there's more fighting goes on and demons are going to be winning again.
There is many times also the demon Maya Dhanava created the well of nectar and the demons were...
And then they get killed.
Again?
Yes.
Materialistic.
It doesn't... Nothing works on the material level perfectly. It's just the way it is. Second question.
About Mohini Murti and the nature of the absorption of the demons in her. She is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yes.
They are demons.
Yes.
They're so captivated.
Yes. And they have an enjoying spirit.
To be completely absorbed in such a way, it's maybe not the same nature, but...
No.
But everyone wants to be focused. Devotee wants to be focused on the Lord.
Yes, but with a loving, serving mood, not in a selfish, self-serving mood. Like Kubja was also focused on Krishna in that way. But her devotion isn't considered. It's almost lust. But because Krishna is the object, we say it's wonderful. But no. We want to be focused with a mood to serve the Lord, not to exploit the Lord for our pleasure. Yes?
Yes.
Seems that Prabhu was the most detached among the demons. He was the most self-controlled. He realized, better I go. Most not.
Well, through intelligence, that's the point that he became. He was enough to. They lost their intelligence.
Yeah.
So therefore, yeah.
And if the demons were smart enough to just share equally among themselves, they would have the nectar in dream, isn't it?
But they couldn't. Because Krishna, he said specifically when they prayed to him, Ajita said, "I'm going to create dissension." But it's part of the demonic nature, it's selfishness. So how could thieves divide things up honestly? You think they're going to give the little insignificant weaker demons someone that can have more for themselves? This is what goes on in the world. You know, they talk about, you know, we want to increase everyone's prosperity, you know, through economic development, but no one wants to decrease their own sense enjoyment. Not no one, but it's the most pious, materially pious, who they want to increase everyone's prosperity as long as it means not decreasing their sense enjoyment. So it can never work because everyone is too selfish. But the devotees, they're selfless because their happiness comes from a different level. Their happiness comes from pleasing Krishna. So if they can please Krishna, they're happy, regardless of what it means to them. So it's such an incredible consciousness. It's so ideal. It's so exemplary. And therefore, the devotees are the most worshipable of all people because they're selfless. Krishna Bhakta Niskam. And therefore, Atta Eva Shanta. And Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kama Shakali Ashanta. They're completely, you have to be disturbed. So there's no question of the thieves dividing everything fairly. They had just stolen it from the demigods. They weren't just in fair. Maybe the big ones would get together and say, okay, because they're afraid of each other. We would divide it up equally because they're all pointing guns at each other's heads. But then they'll fight over the details and they'll ultimately, they can't. Too selfish. Too miserable. Too needy. Internally needy to be fair. And devotees are surrendered to Krishna. What's pleasing to Krishna, that's enough. What exalted consciousness. Did he want to add any more?
Shmini, does this quality of Krishna to reveal the demons actually is manifested in the external energy? Does this...
Say again?
Does the quality of material energy to reveal that everyone has his origin in inimurti?
No, it has. It's in Krishna. It's ultimately the material energy, Maya Devi, is a reflection. There's Mahamaya and Yogamaya. So it's a reflection of the spiritual Yogamaya, which is ultimately potency of the Supreme Shakti, Srimati Radharani. So it's actually a different energy because one's a Shakti and one's Krishna. But the Shakti is so powerful. The Shakti, Shakti Manabina. Yeah.
In Bhagavatam, there is this description of the deity of Mahatattva, Mahendra, is actually worshipping Mahimurti.
Yeah.
There are different layers, and the last layer of the universe is the Mahatattva. So the deity created Gopaka Maharshi, told him, "Don't worry, I won't touch you, just stay, I will perform any service, I will help you in every regard." And you saw that she is worshipping Mahimurti.
Yeah, wonderful. So what did the deity of Mahatattva look like?
My deity is
very
there is worship Malaha, water, worship Matsya, and all the...
Yeah.
It's like when our preachers are... They are within the music lies the Mahamantra. And these people are enjoying the music for their own sensitivity and troubled minds. So still they are getting purified. So how do we reconcile these two aspects? And on one side we are pleasing their senses, their material senses, and on the other side,
we'll
be purified by hearing.
But when we were talking about the motivation and who we chant for, who are we speaking of? Whose motivation?
The motivations of the preachers.
Okay. So what should be the preacher's motivation?
To purify people.
To please whom?
Krishna.
Okay. So there could be. So I, if I'm looking at them, I can't tell what's really motivating them. Because it could be, you could say anything. Oh, I'm doing it for for Lord Chaitanya's movement, but actually I like the sound of the music myself, and I like, and I want to see, who knows what. But it's up to the individuals and the those who guide to try to make sure that things are done with the right motivation. But what to do when, in the beginning especially, our motivation can't be right. Can't be just right because we're too immature. So I think that Prabhupada had to deal with that with us. That the motivation for the best of the devotees was just to please Prabhupada. And that was really, really strong. But other things also easily creep in. So we have to be, we want to keep our motivation right. We should, because we want to get the right result. Because unless our, of course there's mercy coming from the other side, but to get the right result, we want to make our offerings pleasing. And Krishna, what's pleasing is bhakti. Is that all right? There was something in the early 70s that devotees were traveling around to different universities on a bus. They used to call it the road show. Did you ever hear of that? And they used to play rock and roll music and chant, and it was really powerful. And Prabhupada liked it very much, and it was very effective. But then when the devotees began themselves becoming contaminated by it, because being too close to it, it's too much to their recent past, and the staying up late, and the getting up late, then Prabhupada stopped it. So the motivation in the beginning may be simple and pure, but then we have to be careful to maintain the purity of it. It's a nice ring. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments?
I just want to disregard. Sometimes they say, I heard that if people will be satisfied with our program, then that means Krishna is satisfied. And then we are just...
It's a nice ring, but not that nice. Huh?
It's antique intelligence.
Okay, I'm teasing. So, what's the question?
The question is, I don't think it's so important. We have to do our own.
So it's a comment, not a question.
Not an adjustment. Not so much adjusting.
And naturally, others will feel that we should adjust more. Yes? And therefore, you who feel that there shouldn't be any adjustments, I'm taking extreme, will sit down with the people who feel everything should be adjusted and very peacefully and happily come to a nice conclusion so that everyone is satisfied. Yeah. But this is just the way it is. You know, we're individuals, we're all going to feel differently. So, but at least make sure, because if you're the one who says that things shouldn't be adjusted, that you don't adjust things, or minimum. And to those who say that everything can be adjusted, they should make sure about their, to make sure that the inner essence isn't adjusted. Naturally, when there's no one acharya to make definitive conclusions about these things, there's naturally going people on this side and naturally people on this side, and usually they fight and hate each other and criticize each other. Usually, of course, not in your case. But that's what that naturally what happens, and that dialogue, the tension between those two sides, is just what happens. The liberal and conservative viewpoint, when there's no acharya who definitively say it's like that. Prabhupada used to make these discriminations all the time. What could be adjusted, what couldn't be adjusted. But you'll find that you have to adjust things, just time forces. It has to some degree. But how much, Prabhupada once said, that takes, how to adjust something in a practical way that doesn't change the foundational principles, Prabhupada once said, that takes some intelligence, a little intelligence. My comment on your comment, is that alright, or you want to say something more?
I think it's alright.
But I've seen it many times that the people who have similar views on adjustment, the liberal ones and the conservative, they usually sit together with the people who think similarly about them and criticize the ones who think differently.
But what to do if it goes a little bit over the edge? Maybe in a Sunday feast class, they forget to mention Krishna or something like that, or Prabhupada or something like that. It is completely the class is completely in some other alternative.
Yeah, well, see, there's so much. See, I don't because you're thinking of something specific, and I'm speaking about its general principle. So, and when the point of a class, in my opinion, is to speak about the principles. If we have utility as the principle, without purity as the force, everything will be lost, clearly. But if we start speaking about specifics, it ends up in politics, without me knowing what specifically you're talking about. Because that happens when you travel around and give Bhagavatam classes. People will ask you questions, but they're thinking of trying to get somebody over there by getting you to say something that they'll use against them later on. So we don't do that. We don't fall into that one because we've already learned. So if you want to ask about something actually very specific, if you're thinking about something specific, we can ask later, but not in the class. Last question? Did you have one? A comment?
I was just wondering, this whole story of turning the ocean.
Yes.
You connected to the spiritual life of
Bhagavatam.
Yes. Can this analogy be extended to different parts of this story, like the demons and demigods uniting? Is it like a person using all of his propensities in the beginning of devotional service to immortality and part of him rebelling, and then Krishna attracting by some attracting the person to devotional service by some external trappings or something pleasurable in devotional service, kind of a good prasadam or a good music, whatever. Can it be extended to all the parts of the
Well, I think you could go somewhere with that one. if we could find that reference that the demons and the devotees are both in the same person in Kali Yuga, it would make it better. But yeah, you could say that, and also that one has a happy ending. If you take it like that, what you're saying, because then the demon part will lose by Krishna's arrangement. He'll go away, unhappy maybe, but he'll go away, and the devotee part will flourish. By Krishna's arrangement, because it's a fact that we're under Krishna, really. And Krishna cares for us despite our other tendencies, and helps us despite that. We shouldn't take advantage of Krishna's mercy, but yeah, I'm sure you could. This canto is amazing like that. It's so big and it's large and so metaphorical and wonderful. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.